As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Good morning and welcome to the NBA Daily Ding. Happy Friday morning. My name is still Jared Weiss. I am still joined by Keith Parrish, second day in a row here on the Ding. Keith, another incredible quarter of play-in game before it was pure trash.
Yeah, this one wasn't quite as good as Wednesday night games. The Eastern Conference letting us down a little bit with the competitive game standard of enjoyment there.
I mean, this is what happens when you get past like the sixth seed in the Eastern Conference, right? That's the real depth difference. So the Washington Wizards, they win the eighth seed in the play-in tournament by beating the Indiana Pacers 142-115. Bit of a blowout here. It was close after the first quarter. I mean, the lead was kind of going back and forth there. Doug McDermott, he hit a bunch of shots in the first quarter. Things were looking pretty good. Domas Sabonis was crashing the glass really well. And then Russell Westbrook just kind of blew this one open.
At no point did the Pacers appear like they were going to try to play defense, which is something they are wont to do. So this one felt like it was going to be over early, even though like they kept it close in the first quarter. It was like, why are you going over screens on Russell Westbrook? And why are you running him off the line? Like, what are you doing? And again, this Pacers team has these massive scoring. Sometimes they put them out, and I mean, sometimes they're the one putting up 140, and then they're giving up 140 all the time. And then this game was over so quickly, and it devolved kind of like a 2-15 matchup in the NCAA tournament. This one got ugly quickly, and it almost made me think. I mean, I guess everyone held seed in the Eastern Conference play-in, and actually in all of the play-ins so far. Was the play-in just a ruse to trick these teams into trying down the stretch when it actually wouldn't affect the playoffs at all?
Yeah, we always knew that was exactly what it was, right? I mean, besides the obvious wild card excitement of the, you know, the single elimination essentially tournament, yeah, it was to keep all these extra teams engaged and to try to prevent more teams at the top of the non-playoff bracket from not tanking. And we saw Indiana, they really stumbled into the playoffs, had a great game to keep their season alive, and then they just got squashed.
Yeah, they stayed alive just long enough for this horrible thing to happen to them. We should congratulate the Wizards. It's not often you see one of the smaller conference teams like them advancing in the tourney, so I'm proud of the Wizards, and their fans have a lot to be excited about heading into this matchup with the Sixers.
So, I mean, this game wasn't it wasn't complete garbage, but there was like the first 4 minutes where teams just kept missing layups over and over again. Eventually, they kind of caught their stride. It was competitive for a little while. We had in the early second quarter, Robin Lopez hitting those back-to-back hook shots. I just see Fred Katz's smile every single time he hits those. If you guys haven't seen it, Fred Katz wrote a terrific story about that hook shot.
Fred Katz also had the stat for me of this game after the victory. It means Alex Lind ends his longest active streak in the NBA of a player not making the playoffs. Alex Lind has played 530 games and never been to the postseason. So Fred Katz with that stat, congratulations, Alex Lind advancing to the postseason.
You know, I was kind of going to get there in a sec, but I thought Alex Lind was terrific in this game. He's generally, for him, it's been he's for some reason starts, plays 5 minutes, and then they never see him again because I mean, with all due respect to Alex Len, they have two centers on the roster who are better than him. And Daniel Gafford, who was amazing in this game, he had 15 points and 13 boards and five goddamn blocks. And then Robin Lopez, who for some reason has been one of the best low post players in the NBA this season. But both those guys had great games. But I thought Alex Len's defense in those two big stints that he had at the beginning of each half was really good. This, I mean, just the disparity in rim protection between these two teams was enormous. Domas Sabonis just had a horrible night protecting the rim. And he also obviously ended up fouling out. That was a big part of it.
And also Sabonis tonight only had 11 rebounds, which drops his rebounds per game total in the play-in to 16, meaning Jonas Valanciunas is once again the all-time play-in tournament leader in rebounds per game. Again, he lost that briefly after Sabonis' last game.
So that makes him the third best centers in the play-in history to Alex Len. It is ironic that Domas Sabonis gets the triple-double. Russell Westbrook does not complete his triple-double. But also, Russ basically didn't even play at the end of this game. And he was a plus 30, which we know plus-minus is a little misleading, but it wasn't really misleading in this case. I mean, when Robin Lopez had that second hook shot to kind of, was it to take a, like, what, 12-ish point lead or whatever it was, Russ already got his seventh assist. That was just 3 minutes or 4 minutes into the second quarter. I mean, Russ was just kind of already running the show from the very beginning.
Well, it was good to see for the Wizards that Russ was getting those assists. I think that's the key for the Wizards. If we want to talk, I guess, if you want me to talk more seriously about this laugher of a game, because in the Celtics matchup, he didn't get hardly any assists. Did he have no assists in the second half or something like that?
And he said after this game that he embarrassed and let down his team in Boston. I thought that was great to hear him say that.
So I think, you know, when he's getting that ball moving, when he's finding his teammates, when he's feeding that three-headed center rotation and getting them easy looks and dunks, that is when the Wizards are at their peak and are playing their best.
And that was fun to watch. There was this one play, I think it was in the third quarter, where he started attacking the lane on the right, and Brad Beal kind of floated out towards the corner. And then as soon as the help started to just turn to trap the lane on Russ, Brad just immediately dives baseline, and Russ hits him with that perfect bounce pass. I mean, you just see the synergy between these two guys when they're really moving well, and Brad was moving great. I think on that one, he like jumped over the rim and almost like he almost like did like a chin up on the rim jumping off of it. I mean, he looked so much more spry than that first game. It makes you hopeful that the Sixers series will at least be fun to watch, if not maybe super competitive.
No, I'm not. I'm sorry, I can't go that far. I don't think that series is going to be fun to watch at all, unless you're a Sixers fan.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Okay, well, we have to talk about the big game Friday night. Golden State Warriors, Memphis Grizzlies, winner faces the Utah Jazz as the 8th seed. Though Warriors seem like they're a pretty strong favorite coming into this one.
I was actually surprised the betting line is only Warriors 3.5. And as a Grizzlies fan, that gave me encouragement because I see Warriors 3.5. I say everyone in the world is going to bet the Warriors, which means everyone's going to lose their money because Vegas doesn't lose. So actually that line gave me some excitement, like trying to figure out why the line is that low. Are they thinking did the matchup against the Lakers take something out of them? Are the Grizzlies going to be able to adjust based on their loss just this past Sunday? I don't know.
So how do, I mean, the only thing that matters is how do the Grizzlies guard Steph?
Yeah. And they didn't, I mean, they didn't do a great job last time. I think we mentioned on the ding earlier this week that the Grizzlies attempted to run him off the line by overplaying him. They gave up a bunch of layups and back cuts that way. But also, Steph still got off a career-high 22 three-pointers. And so that's like a failure there for the Grizzlies. Steph had 46 points, and you can say, all right, you know, as long as the other guys don't hurt you, maybe you can allow those massive totals just to Steph. But it does feel like the Grizzlies are going to need to tweak their defense a little bit, maybe move around where Valanciunas is. Valanciunas was dominant against the Spurs and the Grizzlies play-in win, but, you know, mobility is not really his thing. And I think the positioning on where they're going to keep him is going to be very, very important. And I feel like they'll probably have to make some kind of adjustment after what they did on Sunday.
And you would think Memphis would want to have Triple J at the five just to maximize versatility, but the team is really struggling in those moments where he's playing the center position.
Right. They, you know, he's only played, I think it's 13 games now this season, and just the lineups with him at the five haven't been working very well. And one of the strengths of this team this season is absolutely just Valanciunas gobbling up all the missed shots. And Jaren Jackson Jr. is not a good rebounder. I mean, he's more of a perimeter player. And so Jaren at the five, then the question comes, who do you put at the four? And I don't think the Grizzlies will be big enough, even against the Warriors, you know, to get any rebounds if it's just Kyle and Jaren out there. So I think they've decided this season it's going to be mainly Jaren at the four, and they're going to ride and die with Valanciunas. But I think the Grizzlies, you know, like, their defense honestly was good enough last game, despite giving up the 46 points to Steph. The Grizzlies' problem was they only made 6 three-pointers, and they couldn't hit any of their jumpers. And if that happens again, they don't have a shot. So sometimes it is just as simple as the Grizzlies need to make, like, I don't know, 12 threes, like, not that many, just like a average number of NBA three-pointers, I think, for them to be competitive.
Yeah, I mean, we know with the Warriors, you can win even with Steph going off if you can limit everything else, as long as Draymond isn't carving you apart. And I mean, Draymond was incredible in that Laker game. And but Wiggins was awesome as a role man. We didn't really get to touch on it enough last game, but our last show. But if he's diving off of Steph actions like that, I mean, the guy's obviously a pretty dynamic finisher. And if he's finishing, I guess that's the one place where maybe having JV underneath most of the game is really, you know, ideal. And maybe Xavier Tillman can handle that a little bit. But there's just no clear answer from Memphis, because I'm not seeing who on the perimeter is going to be the one to be like the big Steph chaser. Maybe Dylan Brooks can do it. Maybe D'Anthony Melton can do it. But there's no like obvious answer.
Right. I mean, Dylan Brooks has had an exceptional run as a defender the past few games. There was a noticeable statistical drop-off if you looked at Steph's stats, even in that 46-point game. When he was guarded by Dylan Brooks, he had a bad shooting percentage. Against everyone else, he was lighting them up. And we saw Dylan shut down DeMar DeRozan in the play-in game. So he's been really on fire. I guess the question is, like, what happens when he's not on the court? D'Anthony Melton's been struggling a little bit for the Grizzlies, and everyone else on the perimeter isn't that good of a defender. But I still think the Grizzlies are capable enough on defense that it is going to be, can they perform on offense? Can they post, I don't know, like 105 offensive rating? Not even a great one. Just they have to be able to score at just a regular rate. And right now, that's been the big issue for the Grizzlies. They're not getting out in transition. They're not scoring on fast breaks. They're not forcing those turnovers they normally do. They're getting stuck in these half court sets, and then when John Morant's off the court, when Valanciunas is off the court, they're getting crushed. And normally, over the past two seasons with Taylor Jenkins, it has been the depth of the team that's really helped them, but the bench hasn't been helping them. I think if you see that second unit, you know, have a good run in the second quarter there, and then you can play Ja 38, 40 minutes, then the Warriors are probably going to be in a game that's maybe a little too close for their liking.
I really like how you yes-anded me being completely wrong about Dylan Brooks not being a great matchup for Steph Curry.
Well, no one's a great matchup for Steph Curry, but Dylan's been playing at his peak powers currently.
Yeah, he has been awesome. I just wasn't sure if he'd be able to chase at that level. But hey, I mean, if the numbers were good enough in that game, then I guess they'll be good enough in this game. Either way, we're in for another great one. That is going to do it for today's show. Don't forget about our other great shows on the Athletic NBA Podcast Network. We have No Dunks. We have How House of Strauss. We have the Athletic NBA Show. We have all of your other favorite team-specific shows. And if you want to subscribe to The Athletic, where you can read my coverage of the Celtics-Nets series, other NBA coverage abound, go to theathletic.com/ding. And Keith, goodbye.
Ding, ding.